Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. Going to be a great weekend. And they've given us 4 free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have 4 of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of 4 micro church conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones, and this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Today's podcast is brought to you by New Breed Training. New Breed exists to provide you with courses, cohorts, and resources from the New Breed team, such as yours truly, Andrea Jones, Ralph Moore, Alan Hirsch, Hugh Halter, and many more. To learn to disciple like Jesus so you can plant like Paul, head on over to newbreedtraining.com. And now, back to the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones, and today's topic is microchurches.
All right, Scott, it's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
All right, so let's jump into talking about microchurch.
Bad feeling about this.
All right, guys. So microchurch, kind of a big buzzword, and I know we've talked about it before, but it's on the rise. And we actually happen to have a course coming up on April 8th for New Breed. We're going to do microchurch training. It's going to be 2 8-week cohorts. So we thought that we would chat about that. There's a lot to talk about with microchurch. It's simple, but it's nuanced, and we should chat about it. Pete, what is your understanding of microchurch? Because I think there's a lot of confusion out there. People don't quite know what it is. They don't know how to define it, or there's different definitions. What have you picked up? And don't worry about giving like the right answer, because I think it means different things.
I'm not going to have it.
No, but I mean, different people means different things to different people, and people fight about it.
Well, it's funny because when you said that, I was thinking to myself, okay, what microchurch means to me, and I shouldn't say it means to me, but what I would see most people seeing microchurch as, we're on our way to being a megachurch, but we're just starting out.
Right.
Like, I don't think most people think of microchurch as the goal. They think of it as the starting place.
Right.
And then we're going to, you know, eventually get enough people for a building, and then we're going to get enough people for a bigger building, and then, you know, we're going to be a Texas-sized church.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair to say that people are in confusion over it. They see the word micro and mega, and they see them as, okay, polar opposites of each other. And that's not actually true. Micro doesn't have to do with size. It actually means that there's a decentralization in like a fragmentation in your gathering. So think of like small groups. And now, again, I'm going to tell you as we're getting into this that I'm going to say things that are going to trigger people, because there are people, if they heard what I just said, think of a small group. No, it's not the same as a small group. Okay. And I'm just telling you, I'm going to say it the way that I say it, because I think helping people understand things is the best way. But also, people are maybe drawing too much of a line of distinction with microchurch. I personally think that microchurch has been around for a long time, 2,000 years. When it says that they met from house to house and in temple courts, the house to house was microchurch. And then you go, oh, okay, so it's that decentralization. So is microchurch house church? Not exactly. Is microchurch small group? Not exactly. Then what is it? And I think that what we're talking about is it's the decentralization piece that you got to. So a microchurch, you can have a bunch of decentralized gatherings called microchurch. One could be 200. A microchurch could be 500, and it could be five. So what is the common denominator? What makes a microchurch?
Yeah, because see, what you just said doesn't make any sense to me. 500 and it could be five doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a function of church and not a model of church. So let me define that. Like a model of church is mega church. A model of church is house church. A model of church is cell group. A model of church is community church. But when you say micro church, it's a little deceptive because your brain immediately wants to go to a model like, oh, well, what kind of new model is this? And it's not. Micro church, it basically means mission-based affinity groups. So the reason that you gather is for the mission that you're on. That's why it can be 500. Let's say Refuge Long Beach, right? I can't remember how big Refuge Long Beach got, but we were all centralized around a common mission. And it wasn't a small group. You know, that thing grew. It also wasn't a mega church ever. I would say that we got community church sized, but we were on mission. Now, the reason we wouldn't say that we were, we didn't call ourselves micro church, because it's not a model. But did we function in microchurch? Yes, we did. We had our missional cogs in the week. And cogs for us, we called them communities of grace. And those communities of grace would go on missional. Excuse me, go on mission. At first, I established them as communities of grace. Then I turned them loose into their own unique mission. Now, at that time, microchurch was not a term. We didn't use that term. It used to be called, like I said, we made up a name for ourselves, because we didn't know what to, we just knew that mission was a unifying factor and the mobilizer. And I'm apostolic, so I'm going to always want to mobilize people on mission. So Brian Sanders, wrote a book called Underground, which raised the public awareness of microchurch within the church. And he really defined it. Like I would say, Brian Sanders, probably one of the most critical thinkers that we have in the church, in these circles. He's amazing. He actually, he worked really hard at defining what he would call a minimal ecclesiology. And the reason he would say that they call them churches is that the minimal ecclesiology is worship, community, and mission. So he defined a microchurch as a worshiping community on mission. And that's a helpful definition. So that's why these missional cogs that I'm talking about in Refuge Long Beach, or back when we did them in Pillar and in Wales, I can't remember what we might have called them cogs back then too. We actually start off calling them pods, PODs, and those they meant something of discipleship. I think it was places of discipleship, and so we moved around. Of course, back then I understood the teaching time, teaching, and tactics. elements of discipleship. So they were called pods. So we were making up terms for the function, but none of these was our church model. It was a function. So all of that to say, the one of the major misunderstandings, and this is not popular what I'm about to say. Most people do think of microchurch as a model. Yeah, we're going to start a microchurch. We're going to start a network of microchurches. And they're looking at it as a model. Am I hair splitting? No. You could take that as a model if you want a decentralized model of cell churches. That's what you're doing. But the reason that I think it's important is that I don't want people to think that that is a model, because all churches of all shapes and sizes and models can engage in the function of micro church practice. And if we continue to tell people it's a model, then a mega church, an established church, a community church, none of them can take part in it, because you've told them that they cannot do it unless they completely shift their model. Any church that gathers for Sunday worship today, this week, could literally shift to a decentralized gathering, series of gatherings during the week. They could even do it on Sunday morning if they wanted, but a centralized and decentralized gathering in that kind of rhythm where you come together, you all come together, and then you spread out on mission in smaller groups, that is the function and practice of microchurch. And that does not have to be a model. That is house to house and temple courts. They all gathered in the temple courts and they divided house to house. They gathered centrally, and they decentralized as they scattered on mission. So that's just the first thing right there for people to know. And it might sound nerdy and like you're going too technical here. But I have a passion to see the entire church go on mission as an apostolic. So I don't tend to think of it as a model. It was never the model of the churches I planted. You could say we engage in microchurch function, but we wouldn't have said we were a series of microchurches. We were just a church, and we practiced something we didn't know what to put a name on. So we called them pods at one time, and places of discipleship and communities of grace another time. And we would function. And the way it would actually work, if you want to get a really good book on it, it's called Underground. If you go into the New Breed microchurch courses, the first one's Gathering Disciples, second one is Scattering Disciples. So it's got that oscillating universe going on, the gathering and scattering. I call it the inhalation and exhalation of the church. We inhale together, we exhale on mission. That is a key reading, is Brian Sanders' book, Underground. Really good book. And he just walks you through what he did in Tampa Underground. So we're gonna cover that. But Brian Sanders, that book, definitely grab a hold of that if you're thinking about joining the course. You're gonna need it. So what questions come to mind, Pete, as you hear that?
Well, I like the idea that you just said that it's about a specific mission, community, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that it makes sense then to call it a micro church if you have 500.
But again, micro is not so much about the size as much as a decentralization. So picture where, let's say, for example, you're going to do community cleanup. It's in the mission part. It's more the scattering part when you're in a micro church. It's a scattering on mission. The centralized gathering is the gathering, right? The scattering might happen in 500. So picture you do like we're going to do a city cleanup, and 500 of us are going to go do that, or 200 of us are going to go do that. So what Brian Sanders pointed out was, he said, you know, I got a group of about, I think it's like 10 people, where their ministry, they're scattering their micro. And I'm using terms Brian doesn't use. I'm synthesizing things from like Hugh Halter, Gathered and Scattered, Brian Sanders. So for me, one thing you guys all should know is that I'm not going to take someone else's book and just spout off. I'll give them credit, but I often take information, synthesize it, and then, you know, we'll present it maybe a little bit more holistically than any one view on it. And that's just how my brain thinks. But, you know, Brian Sanders talks about these group of people that their ministry is to record homeless people, like lay down tracks, get them in a studio, because this group of people, once they started ministering to the homeless, they kept meeting people like when we were in Refuge Long Beach, you know, who had this incredible talent. They're like, oh, yeah, I play the clarinet, or, you know, oh, I'm really good on keyboards. I don't have a keyboard out here. I can't have one. And so they started saying, well, would you, if we provided a place for you to come play, would you want to do that? Well, of course, what they're doing is they're building relationships with these people. And they're actually starting to get involved in their lives and disciple them. And so the mission is discipleship. It's not just music. They would sell CDs. They would cut a CD or, you know, MP3s that can be sold online. And they would raise money with these homeless people to meet the needs of the homeless people. So in a way, it was a way of getting them to participate in a way that they could, and in a way that they could help sustain themselves to meet some of their needs. And it was a ministry that was provided to the homeless community. And that's just one of many stories that Brian lays down. And of course, I've told some of the stories that we did, you know, different times, different gatherings. I'll tell you right now, since I'm planting in present, we actually sat down. Like for me, when you're looking for your mission, like what are we going to do? My mind these days, it didn't always, but nowadays my mind goes to the parable of the sheep and the goats, where Jesus lists off three things. Like I'm always thinking, it's the same with values. Like I taught last night, a denominational group, the Free Methodists that I'm a part of. I meet monthly with the Southeast region and I train them in plantology. And last night I was just telling them how, like, once you see the Great Commission has the APEST in it, you know, you go, well, why do I need to talk about my values? Like we used to train people at NAM to like craft their values. And I remember always feeling weird about it. Like, where do you get these from? Do you just pull them out of thin air? What do you do? And that's no knock on NAM. I'm just saying, like, my thinking, was starting to change. And I remember thinking at that time, like, the values are there. Mission, prophetic power and presence of God, prophet, the prophetic, the gospel, shepherding, soul care, discipleship, and teaching. People going deeper in the Word of God. Those should be the five values. Like, if I'm going to craft values for my church, they should be the five functions of the church. Like, those are my five values. Like, I don't got to make them up. And what if I don't hit the five activities of Jesus and my values that the church is meant to carry on? That's kind of a misstep, right? So now I just tell people, like, hey, your values are already sorted for you. You can wordsmith them however you want, but these are the five categories, five things you ought to be doing. But it's the same with, oh gosh, dang it. This is what my brain does now. It's the same with mission. So when Jesus and the sheep and the goats, he goes, hey, when you visited me when I was sick or in prison, when you fed me and clothed me, you know, Jesus gives three different missions that he says really means a lot to him. So, boom, there's like, are you going to do care for the widow and orphan? There seems to be a thread in the scripture where it's telling us these are things the church ought to be doing. I watched a comedian this week. Comedian was making fun, and I know you saw this article, Pete. Of all people, you had to have seen this. But it was the pastor who was selling Bitcoin, and he was saying that God – oh, you didn't see that?
No.
He's going to prison because apparently God, quote-unquote, told him to create this Bitcoin currency and have a bunch of people invest in it, and he embezzled all this money. That's what he's getting put away for. And he's maintaining, no, God told me to do that. And they're like, he goes, I understand. half of it went to the IRS. Like we're supposed to feel sorry for them. Like, oh man, those jerks, IRS, right? Like, really? You're going to blame this on the IRS? I'm watching this comedian. He's talking about it. It's funny as heck. And then the comedian goes on to talk about this guy, because then the guy remodels his house, right, with a lot of this money. And, you know, God told me to remodel my house. And so the guy just says, you know, there was a time when ministers were poor. Like, we talk about your dad, right? Like, your dad didn't have a ton of money. And he says, you know, there's something about that guy. When he asks you for money, you just think, okay, you know, like, you're more believable. But he goes, when you see this guy and he's wearing, he starts listing off the shoes and the suit, and he's like, you see all that, you just go, no, like, come on, everybody, like, think it through. Right. And at the end, what was amazing was he actually said that if the church, he's like, I mean, he was getting real humble. He's like, look, I just got to kind of think, like, the church, if the church as big as it is, and this wasn't a Christian comedian, he said, as big as it is, if it would do the stuff that Jesus told the church to do, man, the world would be a better place. And everyone started applauding. And it was like, whoa, the world is waiting for the church to go on mission. Like, they're rooting for us. Like, how different that would be. And I know you want to say something there.
No, I was just going to say, it reminds me of someone in the Catholic Church was making the comment, something about the fact, you know, we're not poor anymore. And they were specifically speaking about the Vatican.
Yeah, that's in Church Zero.
Oh, is that in Church Zero?
Yeah.
Where was the whole line?
Yeah, so the guy's giving the Franciscan monk a tour of the Vatican, and he's trying to impress the Franciscan. And as he's shown him all this ornate architecture and art and gold and gilded, you know, whatever, he says to him, he says, never again will the church say, silver and gold I do not have. And the Franciscan said, yes, but never again will the church say, take your mat, rise up and walk. In other words, the power is gone. The power is taken out of it. Like, so easy to get distracted by all that.
Yeah. No, so, but, I mean, that's all I was thinking about. It's just, you know, and I'm not trying to knock the Catholic Church.
No, no.
We got plenty of money on the Protestant side that we'd waste. But, you know,
maybe more these days. It just,
well, depending on the church, for sure.
Yeah.
And again, and we've been talking about this even with the He Gets Us, right? Because that was part of the battle cry from people is, oh, it costs $14 million. And I remember your comment was, do you know how many millions of dollars the church wastes already?
Like, yep. One congregation, do you know how fast they blow through $14 million?
Well, and that's the thing, because I'm here in the Bible Belt. And as Jared would say, one of our church planners, he goes, you're in the buckle of the Bible Belt, being here in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And the churches here are insane.
Yeah.
Like, even the thought of a micro church here, I'm like, man, no one's thinking about a micro church here. But you think, how do I get my next big Dallas sized church?
Well, this was the whole premise of Church Zero. And it was basically that while the size is big, we can afford to miss the essential things that we're supposed to be doing. And so that was kind of what Church Zero was about. And but I make the point that, hey, a time's coming where you're going to have to think about these things because your churches are going to dwindle. When that happens, you'll start asking the right questions. And of course, COVID hits and the majority of America starts asking the right questions. And what I would say is this, going back to microchurch and mission-based affinity groups, what you're really looking at is like for example, once you're on the same mission, like one of ours was cooking classes for teenage mothers. Another one was film club. Another one was reading group. Another one was, we called it Men Who Eat Meat, and they would go do all these construction projects. for people that either had cancer, was shut-ins or whatever. And we would just show up. It was almost like those home shows where they show up and surprise you. We wouldn't tell anyone who we were. We wouldn't invite them to church. We wouldn't do any of that. We just, they could go check with the mayor and figure it out. But we would tell them, hey, God loves you. This is what grace feels like. God's undeserved favor. We literally made it about God and not our church. So we never told them where we're from. And then it became almost like Batman. Like there was this rumor about these people. When people did eventually find out it was connected to our church, it was like what it said in Acts 2:42, the final verse where it says, and they grew in the favor of the people, and the Lord added daily to the number of those being saved. So they grew with favor with the people, started to happen because of what the good works that we were doing in the community. Good works create goodwill. And so we just did that. We kept witnessing, but we started going to, you know, like I said, it's not hard to figure out what kind of mission. We recently sat around my bonfire as a leadership team. We asked the question. We said, "What does it look like for us to go on mission now?" Because I've done this so differently than I've ever done before. I've gathered my core team, and I've trained them without taking them on mission for a year, and I've never spent that long. But I felt that it was what Jesus did in his first year as a disciple maker. He pretty much just camped out in Galilee, preached in the synagogues on the Sabbath, but he really didn't do anything. He went to Jerusalem. He went to Samaria on a field trip. Coming back through, he hits Samaria and heals the centurion servant, but that's it. Like, he doesn't do a bunch in that first year. Oh, he does a wedding of Cana of Galilee, which is kind of accidental. And but really, he just gets to know his team. And so this year, I was like, all right, that's what I'm going to do. And I felt the Lord say, don't do it like you did before. So I relaxed. I took my hands off the steering wheel. Well, what's amazing is our mission really frothed and bubbled to the surface. Because we all sat around that bonfire talking, saying, well, it's time. They're going to start getting restless if we wait too much longer. What should we do? And we asked the question, well, who's God got in the room? He's got a bunch of youth. Okay, that's one thing we know we need to do. But what about everyone else? Like, what should we be doing? And it just kind of, somebody said something, and I could see like the matrix open up, which often is part of the apostolic. And I said, look, all of us like entertaining out of our homes. We like throwing parties. Why don't each of us, because we rotate right now to these different neighborhoods. Every week we're in a different house in a different neighborhood. And I said, why don't we, because I want to reach my neighbors. You want to reach your neighbors. And some of the neighbors have started to trickle in from different neighborhoods when we're meeting in different neighborhoods. And we're like, what if we threw a party once a month at one of our homes, just once a month? And that was our mission. We throw like the best party at our house, invite all of our neighbors and the church plant, and just see what happens. What would happen if we did that for 6 months to a year? You know, so people start to get to know each other. They start to get to know our church. And it's not, hey, come to our church. It's just, let's just throw a party and start making relationships. And man, I'm telling you what, I'm so excited about this right now. That's our mission. And that is a micro church. It's a function of affinity-based mission. We just happen to be in the party mission. So I'm going to pick up a copy of Hugh Halter's awesome book, which is called Happy Hour, which is based on this. If you guys have not read that, Hugh has a talent.
I would just like to point out that I told Hugh on the podcast he needed to sell that book in a six pack. And he's like, you're right, I do. Why didn't we think of that?
And I'm he like, did.
He didn't. It wasn't six. It was like four or something. I'm like, dude, okay. You need a six pack. It's happy hour.
Yeah, except maybe he's thinking it's a tall boy. Oh. Tall boy's selling fours.
How do you know what a tall boy is, Pastor Jones?
Weren't you with the Southern Baptist? Yes, but I was not a Southern Baptist. I was a, apparently I was a free Methodist all these years and didn't know it. So anyways, all right, guys. Well, hey, Pete, I guess he already signed us out. We can't do this, can we?
I told you we can't do it. It doesn't work.
All right. Well, hey, you can go to our phony sign out in a minute, and we'll see you guys next time. And now a message from our sponsor. At Reliant, we understand that the journey towards financial sustainability and church planting can be tough, especially when you're charting new paths. That's where we step in alongside you as a partner. With our biblically based support raising training and coaching, we empower you to invite others to partner with you in the work that God is doing in and through your church plant. But we don't stop there. We also partner with you by handling back-end employment services like payroll, HR support, and comprehensive benefits like medical, dental, and even offer a 403b9 retirement plan. Our goal? Freeing you up to spend even more time sharing the gospel in your context. Oh, and did we mention being able to do it in a healthy and sustainable way yet? If you visit Reliant.org/CPP today, you can learn more and also get access to the 3 videos addressing the questions. Is support raising biblical and applicable to today? These 3 videos are a preview of our training, and we hope they will encourage you as you invite others to be gospel partners with you. Our heart, like yours, is to see more healthy and sustainable church plants. You have the vision, mission, and passion for this church plant. We can help. Visit Reliant.org/CPP today to learn more and get your free resource. Now, back to the Church Planner Podcast. All right, let's get into SPAC Talk.
Tell you something, brother. Now that it's that part of the show where we talk smack, what you gonna do when the Church Planner Podcast runs wild on you?
So, hey, I gotta tell you a little something. I've had a dual monitor system for a while now, and it's amazing. Like, how many monitors you have? You one or two monitor person?
I am a two monitor person with one monitor. I'm sure everybody's a two monitor person. Like, that just sounds cool. But I got this little like cabinet that my computer's in. It only fits one.
Okay. So it changed my life when I went to two monitors. Like, it was made life so much easier, right? Cause I could open up something over on one screen and then, you know, work on the other screen. So 2 days ago, one of my monitors fell and broke.
Oh,
very hurtful. Very hurtful. So I had to buy a new monitor. And so I bought just like a really wide, one of those curved monitors.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of cool. Kind of like it.
You know, I could actually have like my monitor shoved to one side and then do one of those long ones. So I could have like a document open. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I've never really gotten into that. So this one it's technically 34 inches, but it's like, it's really narrow. It's just really, you know, it's 34 inches wide. And so I can have basically, it's like a two monitor, right? So I got one over here and one over there. It's working. I like
That's
it.
Cool,
it's
cool, man. So. That's cool. Well, when this comes out, it will be the week of Exponential. So if you guys are going to be at Exponential, come and see us. Last year we had 4 hours.
And when he says come and see us, he doesn't mean Pete. He means Peyton and his real friends.
Yeah, the New Breed crew. Come see us. The New Breed posse. That sounds like hip hop, like 80s
rap. I work with New Breed. I should be part of the crew, but apparently I didn't get the plane ticket. That's all I know.
I think you were so traumatized by the time you went to Orlando with me and my daughter beat on you with like forks and knives all night at the dinner table.
I totally remember.
I have the best picture of you giving me a look like, if we weren't friends, I would kill your child right now. It was great. But you were like the toy. Remember that old Richard Pryor movie where, you know, he was the toy? The rich kid goes, that's what I want in the toy store.
I kind of do. I don't remember the movie, but I remember that plot. So
yeah, you were like the toy. Yeah.
Where was Eden then?
She was just not even a thought yet.
Okay. Wow. Then Liberty must have been really young.
Yeah, Liberty was, she was a toddler.
Okay.
I remember we were too cheap to buy tickets to go to the Holy Land. But in the early days of the podcast, we used to say that going to the Holy Land was like
our dream. of you and I out in front of the Holy Land sign. And I so remember you going, whatever you do, you cannot post that online. You cannot show anyone that picture. So somewhere out there is a picture of you and I in front of the Holy Land sign.
We actually posted it online. It was, it Did comes we? Up on my Facebook feed sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. Then it was like, it was years later. Cause you would not let me post it. That was like, 100%. You're like, you cannot let anyone see this picture. Oh, man.
Because it was still a thing. Like, it was almost like I didn't want to be seen to be supporting that thing. It was terrible.
You don't support the Holy Land?
If you guys don't know, there used to be this theme park in Orlando.
It's not there anymore?
No, it's closed. It's actually, I passed it a couple times. It's all derelict. It's like a ghost town now. Like, it shut down years ago.
No kidding. I did not know.
We should buy it and make it like Church Planter headquarters. The funniest thing
that would make Vinny really happy, because that's probably the only thing that would get me to move to Florida. I have no desire to move to Florida at all.
I had seen, I know that would be amazing. We would make it like the Holy Pirate Land. Like, we'd make it like a pirate village slash meets Holy Land. And then
with a touch of Star Wars.
We
totally infringe on Disneyland. Ooh, why not?
We could make it some part of like
Disney. People are never gonna go in, so they won't know.
Yeah, that's true. You know what I was gonna say? The funny thing back then is we made fun of the Holy Land because I can't remember if it was like The Simpsons or Family Guy, but somebody had done a parody of it, and I saw these videos come up where they actually did do what the cartoon made fun of. And that is, they had a guy dressed like Jesus, and he's all bloody and scarred up and crown of thorns, and he's carrying his cross down the street. And it's supposed to be this, but he's really nice. And he's like waving at people. Hi, hello, hi. And it's the funny, like, it's such a like, whoa, what's happening here? Like, the biggest disconnect, like, you're doing Jesus wrong, you know, which is kind of the.
All I can say is the funniest text message I've seen in probably 2-3 years was your text to Vinny.
Oh, this morning?
The one where you go, Vinny, he gets us.
Oh, gosh. Gosh, we have had this debate. And I love, like, today, like, Vinny puts on there, hey, I'm posting this because I won't let it go. You know, and he goes, hey,
this has nothing to do with the He Gets Us commercial, but you guys have to see this video. But here's the thing. And so everyone understands the context. So Vinny's getting started in real estate, and he goes, hey, since I haven't done any real estate deals, if you guys would mind, you know, just saying from your experience with me, what I'm like, that kind of thing, if you could leave me that kind of a testimonial, that'd be great. And so Peyton replies back, Vinny, he gets us. I lost it when I saw that, man. That was so stinking funny.
Oh, Vinny hated the He Gets Us commercials. So we had a really friendly debate on there, and just, but yeah, he posted something today. Hey guys, this has nothing. Cause it's like, I'm not triggered, but I think it's funny to keep bringing it up. And so he goes, Hey guys, this is not about the He Gets Us thing, but you know, and of course my response is, that's okay, but I'm totally going to still make it about He Gets Us, which is what I keep doing.
We're like 12-year-olds, man. We never grow up. This is the best.
It's a good thing that Vinny is a Christ-like man, because he has treated us better than our sins deserve.
But is he? Because he didn't like the He Gets Us commercials. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, Vinny can be wrong. We can all be wrong about things.
And it's definitely Vinny who's wrong. That's what I'm hearing from that.
Hey, who has the podcast? Huh?
Who's got the authority? We got the podcast. I think one of the best things is when Vinny goes, yeah, I wrote an article for Peyton. And you go, really? You did? It's like, totally didn't remember anything he wrote for you.
Yeah. You know, I do. I kind of vaguely do remember that.
I don't know if that was with Exponential or what was that with that he wrote?
I think it was for Exponential. He wrote it for. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Back when I was content director, I put it in an APB like, hey, we're trying to put some blogs out there from people on the ground. And yeah. So back then, man, it's kind of like it is now. If you write an article for me now, you're really writing it for Brooks. And back then, if you wrote an article for me, you were also writing it for Brooks. So just,
Brooks wasn't working for you.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. Brooks could have been my boss there, but yeah, he was working under me. But it was ironic because Brooks helped build Exponential from the ground up. So, but yeah. So, anyways, man, what's your smack today?
I don't know that I have a whole lot of smack. I had to buy a new iPad because my old iPad died, and that was a sad day because my old iPad. It was the original iPad Pro. Like, I don't even know how many years old that is.
Whoa.
Like 5, 6, 7 years old.
Oh, was it the really big one?
Yeah, I get the jumbo one because I can't see up close for anything.
Yeah.
So that's why people think I wear glasses. No, you see me on Zoom and I wear glasses on Zoom. Otherwise, I can't see the computer in front of me. Otherwise, I don't wear glasses.
It's weird, man. I'm going blind and deaf. It's crazy to be getting old. And when you
I do that to my kids, and my kids are like, and they'll like repeat themselves, and I go, "What again?" And they're like, "What?"
like nowadays, when I get injured, it's funny. I'm almost at my ideal weight again, but that hasn't changed anything. I'm starting to, I'll pull muscles and stuff, and Andrew would be like, "What'd you do?" And I'm like, "I moved. It's that simple. I just moved." At my age, that's a dangerous activity. You have to be careful when you move. So, yeah, I don't really
getting old have, sucks, man. That's all yeah. I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't really have any smack talk, only to say we're going to be running some stuff at Exponential. If you come, if you register for our Church Planter podcast, you get a signed book. That's kind of cool. It's like a 40 bucks.
What do you mean value. If you register for the Church Planter podcast, you get a book?
Did I say podcast? See, I'm doing that too. My brain, right? Remember we talk about how my brain's going? You know this. You've pointed this out many times.
I would if I could remember that conversation, but I don't.
So, if you register for the Church Plantology, see, I can't even do this. If you register for the Church Plantology self-paced course, if you do it at the conference, we have signed copies of the book for you there that you get right there. Sign-on bonus. Kind of cool.
So you charge an extra $200 if you buy it at Exponential, right? An extra. So they extra? Can get a free book.
No.
So they can get a free book.
No.
I've taught you business. You charge extra for free. This is how it works.
Yes. No, we are not doing that, but that is a great idea. And then we offer it's the only, sale afterwards.
It's only $29.95 to have us ship it to your home. It's free, but it's $30 in shipping.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. That's great. See, I don't.
Let me take you under my wing. I'll teach you how to get all the money you can out of everyone you talk to. It's great.
you sound like, yeah, like you have been to the Holy Land experience in Orlando. So I think that was run by TBN, right?
You know, it probably was, because if they're closed, that would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, have you?
Did TBN shut down?
I believe it did. But have you been by there lately? Because obviously I don't live in California anymore, and it used to be lit up like a Christmas tree every December. And I don't think it is anymore unless someone bought it.
No. In fact, this is the weirdest thing. Now that you're saying that, I haven't even noticed it for a few years. I wonder if it's even there.
Yeah. I wonder if someone bought the property. I don't know. I mean, it's freaking Orange County property, prime Orange County property.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember
cool to go in story. There now and look around. Like if it were empty, to go in there with a camera and look at all the weird, cause there was weird stuff in there, man. Like, I remember not far, you know, where I lived, right? In Huntington Beach, we weren't far from it. And I knew people that had worked in there, when they were building.
True story.
It. And there was weird stuff in there.
In 2004, I did my first book that was called Modern Day Heroes. I had we called ourselves authors, but we weren't really authors. My co-author was Bill Perkins. Bill Perkins was on the planning commission for Costa Mesa. So if you wanted to do anything in Costa Mesa, you had to go before the commission. They had to give you approvals and all that kind of stuff, right? And so we did this book. And what we did was, because it was George Bush versus, I don't know, whoever he ran against in 2004. And we contacted all 50 governors, all 100 senators, all 400 and what is it, 35 or 65? I can't even remember now. House of Representatives, congressmen, and asked them to give us stories of heroes from their states and their communities. So basically, they have all their speechwriters, right? All that stuff's technically in the public domain. And but when we contacted them and asked for it, so if they sent it to us, we could say, hey, you know, I remember we had like Dianne Feinstein and Elizabeth Dole, like both sides of the aisle, right? They gave it to us. So then we could say they contributed to it, right? So that was the reason why we asked them for it instead of just taking it out of the public record. And so my co-author, Bill, here's the catch, man. So he's on the planning commission, and TBN was always in front of the planning commission trying to get permission to do something, right? So they're always trying to be, you know, make nice with him. So he's co-author on this book. And here's the thing. Here's the rub. He's Mormon. And they totally put him on TBN to promote his book. I'm like, dude, TBN doesn't care. They don't care if he's a Mormon. They just want, you know, oh, let's make the planning commissioner guy happy. And I was like, I just remember looking at that. First of all, he tried to hide it from me. I'm like, do you realize how many phone calls I got because you were on TBN? How can you hide this from me, dude? Like, wow. I know you were on TBN. Like,
that's crazy.
But I just remember thinking, wow, TBN does not care that they put a Mormon on there because they just want to make nice with the planning commission.
Yeah. You know, I always remember thinking, because my book came out and people are like, oh, if you get a chance, you know, get on there. That'll really shoot your book sales through the roof. And I'm like, not on your life. I would rather have my book fail and be in the bargain bin at freaking, you know, Christian Discount Warehouse.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Never mind.
Hey, you know what? I think I did see you got your wish. No, but I was like,
some of them were already autographed because people bought a course.
Rather, no, never happen. But hey, last thing of Smack Talk before we got to get in the topic here. Pete, this is a reaction podcast. Okay. So I need to get your reaction on this. We got our exponential shirts back. So I want you to, I'm going to show these to you now. I don't think I can zoom in on the screen. So you're going to have to look, at each of the shirts, but these are the backs of our shirts. The front has the New Breed logo and the back, well, you just have to see. So Pete, tell me what you see and tell me what you think. It's a reaction podcast, not a reaction video, reaction podcast. You ready?
Okay. Oh my gosh. You know, oh my gosh. Here's the funny thing. Okay. So one of them's got the A team and it says we train teams. Here's the thing, man. Do you realize how many of those church planters will have no idea who the A team is?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, even going back, I mean, I got Wizard of Oz. Hopefully people know that. Star Wars.
That one they'll know. Star Wars. I'm telling you, you got to wear that to Disneyland. Let them go after you for trademark infringement.
Oh, no kidding, right?
Is that Pippi Longstocking?
It is. That's my favorite.
See, that's the thing. Like, only people our age are going to know who that is.
I know.
They probably won't even know who G.I. Joe is there.
I know. It's the best, though. So, okay, it's like the podcast. Sometimes you make stuff for other people. Sometimes you just make it for yourself. Just
do it for you.
I figure if we got to wear like New Breed shirts to show like, hey, we are a new breed, you know, whatever. We're running like literally 13 hours of training there. That's crazy. We're going to be at our booths. We got all kinds of, our booth this year is going to be amazing. But yeah, so we got G.I. Joe cartoons, Star Wars. Each of these shirts has a different team on it. It's like the first one's the A-team. That's probably my favorite. Wizard of Oz next. It's pretty funny. I kind of wanted the Golden Girls one because we did one with the Golden Girls.
Did you?
Yeah. And I still just think that's maybe our best design because it's just so out of left field, right? Like you're a church planner or you're a training org and you got Golden Girls on your shirt. That's just awesome. Pippi Longstocking is absolutely my very favorite. So they're all my favorite. It's like books of the Bible, right? They're all my favorite.
Did Vinny actually do those designs?
He did them. Yeah. Nice. Vinny did awesome work, man. We told him we want him to be like those 1970s stickers that you saw everywhere. So that's why a lot of them are vintage. So it's got that vintage look. It's pretty cool. So we train teams. There you go. All right. Well, hey, we probably should get into today's topic, huh?
See, you screwed it up because you remember we already played the topic.
I know.
You did that twice. I was going to say it to you earlier. Like, hey, before we get into the topic, let me show you my t-shirts.
Oh, did I say that?
Something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Then we better sign ourselves out and then give Brooke something.
Hey there, bivocational pastors. Are you tired of spinning your wheels, trying to juggle your church duties and provide for your family? Well, hold on tight because I've got some game-changing news for you. It's time to unveil missionbybusiness.com, the holy grail of training programs crafted exclusively for bivocational pastors like you. We get it. Your time is sacred, and you deserve a money-making solution that won't suck up every minute of your day. In just 9 short weeks, you'll become a powerhouse, armed with the secrets to launch your own business using the mind-blowing force of artificial intelligence. Yep, AI is going to be your secret weapon. Now it's time to stop dreaming and start acting. Head over to missionbybusiness.com and feast your eyes on our masterclass video, which covers everything in much more detail. It's time to build a business that fuels your dreams, supports your church, and provides for your family. Don't wait another moment. Seize this opportunity with both hands. Head on over to missionbybusiness.com now.
Should I do my close?
Yeah.
If you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going, do what nobody's doing, and remember, smack talk comes second.